tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 22nd of July, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I haven't spoken much about Anne Widdecombe's murder. The person, the accused, the suspect, is still being questioned by police. They had 7 days in which to question him, and then they recharged him with terror offences. And now I believe they have another 7 days in which to question him. It's been extended. Of course, we were first told that she had died. We weren't told that she had been murdered at all. The next day we were told that she had been murdered and they had a suspect. It was a white man. And they said, but there's no evidence to show that there was a terrorist or a political intent behind it. And then they told us that counter-terrorism were involved in the investigation. So on the one hand, they said, oh, there's no evidence that there was any terrorist involvement. And then on the other, they were telling us that actually the counter-terror police were involved in the investigation. Next, they told us that the person they had arrested, who just happened to be a local delivery driver, he had been released and they had arrested somebody else, another white man. And now the counter-terror were leading the investigation because they had found some Russian communist literature at the person's house. And I'm wondering, does that mean that this was written in Russian? Or does it mean that it was communist literature back from the Soviet Union? We're not really given the information on this. We're not really being given much information on it at all. We have Hope Not Hate that had a website page devoted to Anne Widdecombe, devoted to attacking Anne Widdecombe, basically, for her right-wing views. Hope Not Hate have now taken that page down. And some people are saying, well, could that be because the killer was inspired by Hope Not Hate's page? Could there be a connection to Hope Not Hate? And Hope Not Hate, of course, are saying, well, the reason why we've taken the page down is out of respect for Anne Widdecombe. And that's a reasonable enough excuse for it. But it does look as if the police are covering something up. We haven't heard anything for the last couple of days. You contrast that with when you hear of any other terrorist attack. We're given all sorts of information straight away about what they find, what evidence they find at the person's house. They give us a lot of information. And we're just not being told anything about this. And apparently, Keir Starmer told Nigel Farage that it was a burglary that went wrong. So why has this been this cover-up from the beginning of what went on here? It's suspicious that they're not giving us the information. They're not giving us all the information. But one predictable side of this, and this is just incredible that they could try and do this, we're now getting calls for more censorship and blaming online hate for Anne Widdecombe's murder. It's a right-wing person that got murdered, not a left-wing person. And this reminds me of after I forget his name now, the male conservative politician was murdered by an Islamic extremist. And straight away you had calls for more censorship online, as if that had anything to do with it. I'm just amazed at this, that the left are calling for censorship when it was somebody on the left that actually killed the person on the right. Are they calling for censorship of left-wing people? Of course not. Well, this comes from Breitbart. The headline is, "Leading leftist lawmakers attempt to blame online hate for Widdicombe killing and push for more censorship. Left-wing British politicians have already begun to seize upon the killing of Brexit hero Anne Widdicombe to push for more censorship on social media to combat hate, despite police having made no public indication that the suspected killer was radicalised online." Well, they don't need any evidence that the killer was radicalised online. The government are just going to step in there and blame that anyway, because they always do. I forget his first name. His surname was Osborne. He hired a van, a transit van, drove to London, ran over a Muslim, got 30 years for this terrorist attack. And they asked him, you know, what made you do this? And he said, well, I was watching the BBC and there was a documentary about grooming gangs. And that made me angry. And I wanted to fight back, or words to that effect is what he said. And this was brought up in court, I think it was. And that all the mainstream media were talking about was the fact that he'd been radicalised by Tommy Robinson, because he followed Tommy Robinson online. And I think Tommy Robinson got, I think he might have paid for the court transcripts. And there's literally no mention of him following Tommy Robinson online. The newspapers just made it up. So regardless of the evidence, they will always try to push for more censorship. In this case, even when the person who's been killed is a right-wing politician, the government will step in there and start saying, we need more censorship of online hate. The political media and law enforcement establishments were quick to condemn British citizens for speculation over the potential motives behind the killing of former Conservative government minister and Brexit Party member of European Parliament, Anne Widdicombe, while accusing her longtime allies, like Nigel Farage, of seeking to exploit her death for political purposes. I mean, how can you exploit it for political purposes? It's like when they say about exploiting Henry Novak's death for political purposes. It's not exploiting the death to try to prevent another one from happening. It's not exploiting Anne Widdicombe's death to be saying, well, what was it that encouraged this person? Could it have been likening Anne Widdicombe to Hitler or demonising her in the left-wing press? And then you're seeking to prevent this from happening. If you're trying to say that politicians should have good security, Nigel Farage should have good security, he shouldn't have to pay for security out of his own pocket. That's not politicising this. That's trying to prevent a tragedy from occurring again. It's the same with Henry Novak. It's not politicising it to say we need an end to two-tier policing and we need to change the Equality Act, because if we don't do that, the likelihood is there's going to be another Henry Novak. We're trying to prevent this from happening again. That's not exploiting a situation for political purposes. It's trying to prevent another tragedy from happening. Contrary to Widdicombe's long career in public life, in which she stood as a strident defender of free speech, and she did. One of my memories of Anne Widdicombe is her defending the right that we have in Britain to quote-unquote Holocaust denial. And she was saying, I utterly condemn the people that have these views, but I defend their right to discuss these views and to have these views in Britain. And we should be very proud of the fact that we don't have Holocaust denial laws like they have in Europe. There's nothing that you shouldn't be allowed to discuss or ask questions about. And I was very impressed with that. I mean, can't expect her to say, oh yes, they're wonderful people. I mean, she's got to condemn people and appear to toe the party line in some way. But the fact that she was supportive of free speech, I thought, was absolutely fantastic. I really liked Anne Widdicombe. I mean, that's my favourite point about her, basically, was that she supported free speech. So when they say here she's a strident defender of free speech, she actually was. Not like Toby Young or, you know, the people associated with the Free Speech Union or GB News who will defend free speech to say that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. But she actually defended Holocaust revisionism, which is right on the cutting edge of free speech issues. Lucy Powell, the deputy leader of the Labour Party, took to the floor of the House of Commons to give a speech concerning Whittacombe's death to advocate for more government speech restrictions. How is that respective of Anne Whittacombe's death, when she was so supportive of free speech, to use her death to try and call for restrictions on it? I mean, the person that is politicising this or exploiting her death is this Lucy Powell. We do need to tackle some of the online algorithms and business models which heighten this kind of polarisation and hate towards those in public life. And we must do more to tackle this with urgency, she said. Well, what does she mean by what she's saying there? Well, we've talked about it before, haven't we? We've talked about how, and I think it's this particular woman as well, this Lucy Powell, is seeking to force companies like YouTube to promote the BBC and ITV and all these other left-wing organisations. So when she says tackling online algorithms which heighten this kind of polarisation, what she means is just forcing left-wing propaganda on people. And it's arguable that it was the left-wing propaganda being forced on people that led to somebody trying to murder Anne Whittacombe. And just look at the way that they liken people on the right to Adolf Hitler. I mean, they talk about Donald Trump being Adolf Hitler. They talk about Nigel Farage being a fascist. And, of course, we're also given this myth that we fought the fascists. You know, we have to go out and kill fascists. So you end up with people doing ridiculous things like this and thinking that they've done the right thing. They've done a good thing. They got rid of the fascist Anne Whittacombe. Well, it's the left-wing propaganda that encourages people to believe that. People on the right, we look at people on the left and we think, well, they're misinformed. And people on the left, they look at people on the right and they think, they're evil. The world would be a better place if they weren't here. You know, it's a completely different way that we look at people. On the right, we would rather have a debate. We'd rather have a conversation. People on the left just want to silence you, and they don't care how they do it. Just look at the placards that they use. Smash the fash. You know, they're always talking about, or smash Nazis. It's always violent imagery. They're always talking about smashing people. Whereas people on the right will have something like, say no to immigration. Not talking about violently attacking people. And the left just get away with it. While Powell claimed to have greatly admired and respected her outspokenness, her fearlessness, and her ability to not take herself too seriously, the Labour politician has her self-directed hate towards Whittacombe's party, previously describing Reform UK as a poison and a cancer, which must be defeated. So, when did you ever hear Nigel Farage referring to somebody on the left as a poison and a cancer? I mean, this is an example of the way that they look at these things. And it's propaganda like that, calling your opponents poison and a cancer, that results in people... that's dehumanising Reform, isn't it? To say that they're a poison and a cancer. And that's the sort of propaganda that leads people to go on and attack people. Whittacombe herself has long faced accusations of spreading hate over her deeply held religious beliefs, which spurred her opposition to the LGBT movement, including gay marriage, open borders, and abortion, among others. Now, interesting, the Daily Mirror made a false accusation against Anne Whittacombe. When the news came out that she had died, they said that she wanted to shackle female prisoners in manacles while they were giving birth. And the truth is that when Anne Whittacombe came into office, and she was the Justice Secretary, that's the same as David Lammy was today under Keir Starmer government. And in actual fact, when she came into office, that was a policy that female prisoners, if they were to give birth, they were to be manacled in handcuffs. And she campaigned against it. And the Daily Mirror had to issue an apology for saying that that was what she actually wanted to do. And this is an example of the left-wing media and the things that it says. And that's who this Lucy Powell wants to see promoted, the sort of media that come out with stuff like that. I mean, I haven't heard anybody referring to the Daily Mirror as misinformation. But she was a traditionalist. I mean, she was a Catholic. She joined the Catholic Church because before that she was an Anglican. She was Church of England. And when the Anglican Church started ordaining women priests, priestesses, effectively, she then left and joined the Catholics. She said that was a step too far. So she was a woman of principle, a principled person. And she was quite happy to debate with left-wing people. And it's such a shame that she's gone. Indeed, the left-wing Labour Party-aligned Guardian newspaper previously described the Brexiteer as a Tory hate figure. The Labour ally, the Trades Union Congress, also accused Whittacombe of spouting hate speech. This is an elderly woman who has traditionalist views, and yet they accuse her views of being hate speech. You know, the real haters are the ones that try to silence other people for having a different opinion. And that's all it is. If somebody has a different opinion today to somebody on the left, then that's it. They're a hate figure. If it's something you disagree with, then it must be hate. Although there has yet to be any evidence to back up Powell's suggestion that online hate contributed to the killing of the former MP, there does appear to be some evidence that far-left ideology played a role, with communist literature allegedly being found at the home of the current suspect. Because, of course, when they refer to hate, they just mean nationalist or right-wing. People on the left, it's impossible for the people on the left to be using hate speech. But I would say that calling her a Tory hate figure and accusing her of spouting hate speech, you know, it's the people making those accusations that are actually hating on somebody, not Anne Whittacombe. In the immediate aftermath of the killing of Whittacombe, Farage and others faced heavy criticism for suggesting that it was a premeditated murder. Well, it was. Now we've been told that it is a premeditated murder. Rather than keeping their options open, police repeatedly briefed against such ideas. But that stance was dramatically walked back when counter-terrorism police South East took over the case last Monday. And this is it. But the police must have known that it was a murder. I mean, she was battered to death, basically, is what it sounds like. And counter-terrorism were also a part of the investigation. So why did they keep telling us that it wasn't a premeditated murder and then telling us it wasn't terrorism? And why would they put out these deliberately dishonest answers? And don't forget, these are the officials giving us this misinformation. In fact, it would be disinformation because they're deliberately giving out false information. So it's not just misinformation, it's disinformation. The attempt by the left to weaponize Whittacombe's death for the purposes of pushing for even more state control of the internet is reminiscent of the Tory effort to do the same following the Islamist terror killing of former Conservative MP David Amos. And I was amazed at that. Absolutely amazed. Again, you've got somebody right-wing that's been murdered by somebody on the left. I mean, this guy was a jihadist, effectively. And, of course, you see these radical Muslims joining the Green Party. This wide coalition of the left also includes Islamists. And yet there were the calls, for clampdowns on Twitter and clampdowns on free speech. And yet it was somebody on the left that carried out this murder. Despite radical Islam being the apparent motivation for the killer of Amos at the time, and as was later confirmed in court, then Tory MP Mark Francois introduced David's Law to end online anonymity in a bid to combat so-called hate speech on social media. However, the legislation was ultimately abandoned after steep public backlash. I mean, that's absolutely incredible to try and introduce something called David's Law to get rid of anonymity online on the back of David Amos being murdered by an Islamist. I mean, I was quite shocked to see that. I mean, you expect them to call out for censorship. But Mark Francois, up until that point, he had appeared to be pretty good. I mean, he was a Brexiteer. He gave some very good right-wing speeches. And then after David Amos was murdered, he came out with this, which you'd expect to come from somebody on the left. You certainly wouldn't expect it to come from somebody on the right. So you've got the same thing going on now with Anne Whittacombe's death. You've got the left once again calling for censorship. At the same time, and this is another news story that we've got here, the government have put out a report describing what they view as misinformation. This comes from GB News. Thought Police fears as anti-trans views branded false and misleading information in official report. And it's not just anti-trans views, it's also criticism of the grooming gangs. That's also being included as misinformation. Britons who defend women's rights or speak out against grooming gangs could be at risk. Now, I've had a look to try and find the actual report itself. I would like to read the report in its entirety. None of the news stories actually give a direct reference to the report by name, so I've been unable to actually find it online. Every time I look for it, I just get newspaper headlines and newspaper stories about it. So we'll just have to use this GB News article for now. Anti-transgender views have been labelled as misinformation in a government-commissioned report. So to say that there are two genders and no more, that's misinformation. The 136-page document produced by academics for the Office for Science outlines how ministers can use psychology to fight so-called false narratives. It even recommends these techniques be applied in schools and public messaging. Well, I imagine they're already doing that. We already know that these teachers in schools, they're trying to be anti-fascist and anti-racist. They call for that at their union meetings, and they call for training in how to be an Antifa and how they can teach the children to be Antifa, literally teaching the children to be left-wing thugs, effectively, at school. So they're already using these techniques. They're already manipulating the children. Published in May, the research identifies 11 categories of misleading information circulating in Britain, drawing on data from EU-funded fact checkers. And I'd like to see what each of those categories are and see exactly what they claim is misleading information. One of those is anti-LGBTQ plus narratives. And I guess what they mean by anti-LGBTQ plus narratives is reporting on any statistics which show anything negative associated with the group. Gender ideology claims, targeting schools and public institutions, pride event misrepresentation, and transgender athlete controversies. Pride event misrepresentation, now that's an interesting one. Now, I've been around for quite some years now, and I remember before we had gay pride in the middle of the summer, and homosexuals wanted to have these gay pride events, and I think they might have already had them in America or had them in Israel possibly. And the whole idea of the gay pride event was that they would be so over the top with their sexuality that when people just saw them holding hands or kissing, it would normalize that behavior. So the whole point of the gay pride event was to be overly sexualized. It was to shock people, to shock people with the sexual activity, so that when homosexuals were seen doing lesser homosexual activity, that would be normalized. So in effect, sort of having gay sex in public would be a shocking thing that they could do, which would make it so that it didn't look quite so shocking if two gay men were seen kissing. And that was the idea behind gay pride. Now, 25 years on, you've got children at schools waving pride flags and doing gay pride events. And yet the whole point of the thing was to be scandalous about their sexuality. How can that be seen as suitable for children to be involved in something like that? Now, would the government say that I'm misrepresenting pride there? Because, I mean, I'm taking this from the proponents of gay pride from their own mouths. I mean, I used to read this documentation. I used to read the music magazines. I wasn't a nationalist at the time. And I read about all of this and this phenomena and what they were trying to do with it. And yet I would probably be accused of misrepresenting it now for actually saying that. But, you know, that was the idea behind it. Transgender athlete controversies. Are they saying it's controversial to say that men shouldn't be taking part in women's sports? So that's misrepresentation as well. That would be misinformation. I really would like to have a good look at this report so we could have a look at the details of it and challenge them, because I suspect that a lot of them are just things that they don't want to be challenged on. Or if you are challenging them, then they'll say that that's misinformation. Among the examples is coverage of Olympic boxer Iman Khelif, with claims about the athlete's biological sex listed as potential racist or Islamophobic misinformation. Well, I don't think it was against the person's race. Khelif was disqualified from the 2023 World Boxing Championships by the International Boxing Association for allegedly failing gender eligibility tests. It's because the person had XY chromosomes. That's why. Either they had XY chromosomes or they tested positive for too much testosterone. Maybe they had polycystic ovaries, which is, I think that's the term. That's when women have effectively testicles growing on the inside of them and it produces more testosterone. So they have more testosterone. They look more masculine. And they can fail a test for being a woman because they got so much high testosterone. And I think that was the case here with this boxer. I don't think it was somebody that was transgender. It was somebody that was producing more testosterone quite naturally. But because of that high testosterone, they shouldn't really be fighting against other women. They should be fighting against other people with abnormal hormone levels, I would suggest. But that's not racist or Islamophobic misinformation to be pointing that out. And the World Boxing Championships themselves tested them. So it shows that there was a question over gender. I'm not transgender, I'm a woman, the athlete later told CNN, though Donald Trump has referred to Khelif as a male boxer. Well, they did have the same amount of testosterone in them that a male person would have. And of course, that's going to put a female at risk fighting against them. I don't think women should be taking part in boxing anyway. But also, if you have like higher testosterone levels from youth, from a young age, they're also going to have partially gone through adolescent as a male as well. So they're going to have much bigger muscles, much more fighting strength. It's not as if as an adult they started taking testosterone. They'd had it all their life, effectively. And they were just born that way. Is that misinformation to say that? The Shadow Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Alex Burkhardt, has now raised fears of Orwellian thought police. While Labour claim to be combating misinformation, they are in fact preparing to usher in an Orwellian thought police with the power to censor common sense values and opinions held by millions of people, he said. Well, it's not just Labour that tried to do this, it's the Conservatives as well. It's whichever party is in power. It's a little surprise that a government so wedded to cover-ups and concealment should seek to suppress dissent. But it is no less alarming for that. Mr. Burkhardt warned the proposals could restrict speech from campaigners defending biological women's rights or speaking about grooming gangs, and has called on Andy Burnham to reject the report. I really need to see this report because I'd like to learn what it has to say about grooming gangs. What do they claim is misinformation that people say about grooming gangs? Because obviously talking about gender issues, I mean, this is rather sort of milquetoast free speech idea that GB News likes to cover a lot. It's on sort of safe ground, isn't it? I guess on free speech, you can go on a scale from talking about gender to talking about World War II and Holocaust revisionism. And GB News are right at the bottom with a little bit about talking about gender. And the CivNats and the mainstream sort of right wing will try to hide everything else that's evolved in free speech issues and just pretend that that's what it's about. It's just about men in women's spaces, promoting feminism. Effectively, but that's not that important when it comes to talking about things such as the grooming gangs, where you've had 250,000 young girls raped by predominantly Muslim grooming gangs. That's more of an issue than physically a boy being in a girl's changing rooms, I would have thought. The report advocates for pre-bunking as a primary defence against misleading claims taking root in society. And what that means, I guess, is giving a straw man argument before people actually hear the argument being given. They'll create a straw man argument. And we see them doing this all the time when they say that, nationalists just hate people because of the colour of their skin. That's a straw man argument. That's what they mean by pre-bunking. So they'll give straw man arguments to children as a way to sort of build a defence against when they hear the truth from people as they get older. Central to this approach is psychological inoculation, which involves exposing people to weakened versions of false claims to build resistance against future manipulation. That's what a straw man argument is, isn't it? It's a weak version of an argument that you know that you can quite easily destroy. It's giving a false view of your opponent. I say the most famous one of those is when you say that, nationalists, they're just racist. They hate people for the colour of their skin. As if that's the only difference between people groups is what shade their skin colour is, as if that has any bearing whatsoever on things. And it's things such as IQ statistics and crime statistics that are more important than what shade somebody's skin colour is. Mr. Burghardt said this was frankly terrifying. Academics behind the report also urged ministers to establish a massive database of false narratives updated every month, so so-called misinformation can be tracked as it spreads across Britain. Of course, what they would do with that, they would build up this database of what they call false narratives. They would have what they call fact checkers, basically people that are enforcing the government opinion on things. And people like Hope Not Hate, they would get them to report to an office in the government anything that they don't like, any opinion that they don't like. That would then be labelled as a false narrative. And the Home Office would then tell the social media company about that false narrative. And then the social media company would have to remove that content or face a ban. And that's what the Online Safety Act does. It says that content which can be completely legal, doesn't break any laws anywhere, but that the Home Office decides is misinformation, the social media company has to take that down. So this is how they would do that. They would establish this database of what they call false narratives, and that would be linked up with a department that tells the social media what to ban, and then they would ban it. Through this, they can prioritise tackling the harms caused by certain claims, rather than focusing on the intent behind them. How about they talk about actually preventing these sort of things from happening in the first place? Why don't they prevent the grooming gangs from happening in the first place, rather than try to prevent people from talking about it? The government has tried to distance itself from the report, insisting it is an independent review and does not represent government policy. Well, it must be quite an embarrassing report then. I really would like to read this if they're sort of trying to distance themselves from it. It is and always will be an absolute priority for the government to protect our democratic processes, including freedom of expression, a spokesman said. We don't have freedom of expression in Britain, just the same as we don't have freedom of association. Both of those have been taken away from us. We don't have freedom of speech. If you don't have freedom of speech, then your democracy cannot function properly because people can't speak the truth. And the best ideas are not going to float to the surface if you're going to censor certain ideas. And to say when they replace one population with another as well, that's another essential thing that you need for a democracy to work, is it needs to be homogenous. It needs to be one ethnic group. And they've known this for over 2,000 years. And yet the modern Western world seeks multiculturalism. It literally destroys the democratic process and then claims that it's trying to protect the democratic process by silencing the people that point this sort of thing out, that democracy can only work if you have one ethnic group. Anyway, we wait to see with bated breath what Andy Burnham's government are going to do about free speech issues. And if I do actually find this report, if I find the name of it, then I will have a good look through it. So thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.